Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast is full of cuss words, but I just want you all to know I, Arthur Delaney, did not say them.
So that happened. This week, President Barack Obama announced that the United States would make an effort to normalize relations with Cuba, ending a decade-long policy of distance that had been surprisingly effective in doing nothing in particular. Meanwhile, a Seth Rogen, James Franco comedy has been canceled, literally canceled, because North Korea apparently now dictates what movies we watch in our spare time. Has everyone just started taking crazy pills? What is happening? And finally, we're taking a look back at 2014, a fantastic year for garbage monsters. Why didn't we sneak up on 2014, hit it over the head with a shovel, and bury it in the shallow grave back in April when it was already acting psychotic? I'm Jason Linkins. I'm here today with the Huffington Post, Zach Carter and Arthur Delaney. And here's what happened first. So what an amazing, epical week this has been, I guess, maybe.
Totally took me by surprise.
Out of nowhere.
Yes. Barack Obama, I guess in now we're going to sense the last two, maybe it's the last 2 years of his term. Maybe it's just like, again, lame duck nonsense. He like totally went YOLO and we are normalizing our diplomatic relations with Cuba.
Can we also say the one of the main like power brokers in this was also Pope Francis?
Yeah.
The Pope making a huge play in like geopolitical shit. This is like some 12th century action. It's crazy.
Dope Pope getting shout outs.
This Pope is on fire.
Yeah.
And they had been working on this for about a year and the White House was sending people to have meetings with Cubans in Canada, and there was a fateful meeting at the Vatican?
At the Vatican.
Amazing. But nobody knew about it.
It was all secret.
Outside of the people who were involved, aside from like Ben Rhodes and Jim McGovern and a few other people, and I think that you could...
It was like the zero dark 30 of diplomacy.
Marco Rubio seemed blindsided. He was so mad.
He's really pissed.
So did Menendez. I was like, okay, those two, when they got the news, I don't know. It was like they became like weird wind-up toys of outrage. The speed by which Menendez and Rubio found cameras. I have to worry that anyone standing between those two and a camera yesterday probably nearly got killed. Someone in the hospital.
Jason,
gotta be some ligament damage.
There's a TV studio like in the center.
Of course.
So that's they can just go to that.
But if a bull charges you on like right. You know it's way down on a one block run, it still hurts.
Yeah, like Rubio popped out of his desk. Here's the thing, and I would have said up to yesterday if you'd asked me to talk about Marco Rubio, I would have said, you know, this guy. Good sense, good humored, you know, he's the type of guy who does more putting his head down and doing work than jumping around making media appearances. But yesterday, man, turned it. We found that level at which Marco Rubio is just like, give me a camera. And it was like he was on every channel complaining about the fact we've normalized relations.
And his complaint is essentially that we are appeasing a dictator. That's the complaint.
That's it.
Right.
And I guess the preferable thing would be not normalizing diplomatic relations, which is, you know, we have had this embargo and these no relations for 50 years, and the same guy has been running that country.
Right.
And nothing has ever changed.
Everything is the same, just the people are poor, and there are human rights problems that get exacerbated through economic distress.
Yeah, and here's the thing. There's an element to the continuation of the embargo that has never quite made sense to me because I've never really known what's the goal here? What's the outcome? What is it we want
to do? The goal is for the regime to just crumble because the people will rise up.
I feel like we've embargoed Cuba mainly because we had the need to, like, have this kind of like emotional display. We don't like you.
It's totally a Cold War hangover.
It's vestigial Cold War policy. I think that's a fair description, even though Marco Rubio and Bob Menendez are saying what a tyrant appeasement this is.
Okay. Bob Menendez, though, to be fair, also is constantly he's just a little bit to the left of like Lindsey Graham and John McCain on foreign policy. Like he's also threatening to blow up the Iranian sanctions diplomacy stuff a few times. He's very hawkish and likes the tough guy chest thumping approach to foreign policy.
So with the Senate flipping, maybe not even really a big difference in terms of the congressional reaction to this and lifting the embargo, which it would take Congress to do. It'll just be the same as it is now.
Yeah, the normalizing of relations here so far is a very modest step. We still have formally this embargo in place. And
this doesn't change the embargo.
However, but this does allow people to buy cigars, you know, import cigars and alcohol.
If you can get there, though, and there are only certain – like it's great for journalists. So like we should definitely talk to our boss, Ryan, about making a trip to Havana.
Well, you know, you'll notice Ryan is – you'll notice that Ryan is not here today. He may have already gone to Havana.
Yeah, he probably
is. Yeah, I think he is. Yeah.
That's the kind of thing Ryan does.
Yeah.
It's also the kind of thing – okay, this is the – I want to talk about the actual stakes of what maybe we get out of normalizing our relations with Cuba. But I want to point out that – was this real yesterday? Like Charlie Rangel appears on television and like he's been chilling in Havana this whole time. Did you guys see that? Mm-hmm. Like he was on TV.
Tell us more about it.
I just caught it out of the corner of my eye. Charlie Rangel shows up on, I think it was MSNBC, and like behind him, it's Havana. And I was like,
he maybe has a house there.
I don't. Yeah, probably. Probably. Maybe that's actually where he lives, like on a regular basis. Charlie Rangel is actually Cuban, and he's been fooling us this whole time. He's in the Buena Vista Social Club.
So there's more.
Maybe he's Raul Castro.
More background to this. It's broadly popular. More than 60% of Americans say, go ahead and get right with Cuba. And a majority of Cuban Americans say this, which is new. Because previously, the embargo had the support of a majority of Cuban Americans, and now it only has the support of a majority of older Cuban Americans. Right. So Obama is all there's politics that are winning for him because it isolates certain Republicans from popular opinion.
Basically, if you are older than Marco Rubio and you are Cuban American, you might be mad about this.
Marco Rubio,
you probably won't be,
is a Cuban American. Or, you know, his parents left Cuba, but there's disagreement. You know, he
and that's a fun story.
His rise to political prominence was, you know, he would always say, my parents were Cuban exiles.
They fled the Castro regime.
But they didn't.
Nope.
What happened?
They left, I think most of the documentation shows that they left in 1956, which was 3 years before the revolution toppled Batista.
Meaning they left for economic reasons. They were not political exiles,
right,
which is a much sexier thing.
Or if they were political exiles, they were political exiles from, the Batista regime, which was, you know, just basically a whole bunch of, like, prostitution and hotel cartel.
Right.
It was the Washington Post reporter Manuel Roig Franza had this story in several years ago, and I was rereading it this morning, and part of it says that the political exile Cuban community in Miami is distrustful of Cubans who left before Castro came to power, which I found interesting.
Yeah,
I'd like to know more about. So that's a big deal. Not only in terms of him maybe being dishonest or being careless, but also it means something to Cuban Americans that it doesn't necessarily to the rest of us.
Isn't that more on his parents than him, though?
I think it is because his office, when confronted with, documents reflecting that they'd arrived here in 1956, was forthcoming to the Washington Post reporter and was just like, oh. And he himself was saying, well, this was oral history of my family.
Right.
I don't carry around these passports with me.
And why would you?
I mean, and why would you? So and why wouldn't you tell the better story if you're not really expecting it to be under Klieg lights and embarrassing your son. So nobody's too mad at him for that. However, you do have to smack down trolls on Twitter when they bring that up, the Cuban exile thing. You do have to keep your ducks in a row when you're talking about Marco Rubio.
That's true. Okay, so let's talk about what we get potentially out of normalizing diplomatic relations with Cuba. Like, how does actually – I mean,
get an embassy.
We've thrown shade now on the cool decades-long embargo, saying it's not effective. Well, what will this be effective?
And we can say that because the Castros are still in – I mean, that's it.
Yeah, there's nothing.
It's not more.
It's affected Cuba.
It didn't work.
Not a whit, right? Yeah.
Cuba's really poor.
Yes. Yeah, and their government's corrupt. But okay, so now we're reestablishing ties with this government. What happens? What can we expect to maybe happen? What's the goal of this, and what's the outcome?
Well, I mean, the big fish in the long term is the embargo, right? I mean, the embargo basically keeps Cuba from being an economically functional modern state. So if you can either weaken or remove the embargo, that would fundamentally change Cuba as a nation and the United States' relationship with it. I mean, it's interesting to me that the way trade gets talked about with other countries is often like when people want to do a free trade deal with some country, and I use free trade in the post NAFTA sense of whatever people decide to call free trade is just called free trade, but. They'll say Paul Ryan would say this about we had a free trade deal with Bahrain, terrible human rights abuser. But the idea is that if we have trade relationships with these guys, they will see our values, they will come around to see the world the way we do, and it will become a better place because of all this trade.
We're gonna rub off on them.
Exactly,
they're gonna have our blue jeans and our Coca Cola,
right,
and our freedom and our happiness and our respect for women and all of that shit. And it with Bahrain, it hasn't really worked out so far. It has not actually happened.
The United
States
has a lot of respect for women and.
Interesting concept.
Probably more than Bahrain.
Yeah,
right.
Probably.
Yeah. Okay. So we're beating you, Bahrain.
But my point here is that it often sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. It hasn't really worked out well with Bahrain. But the argument with Cuba has always been exactly the opposite. That if we trade with them,
they turn into garbage monsters. suddenly they're horrible. Suddenly everything goes wrong. Yeah, it's weird. And it was weird hearing Rubio talk about this. He was sort of poo-pooing the idea that establishing economic ties was bad for Cuba. And I was just like, are you down on capitalism as a concept, Marco Rubio? Or you just think Cubans can't handle it?
And to be the American business community, the Chamber of Commerce is fully behind this.
Are they? They were. I don't. When did they put out a statement about this?
I didn't read it myself, but I have read that they are in favor of this.
The Chamber
likes definitely. They've definitely made it known.
Well, they didn't.
And further, doing the isolation thing to Rubio and Republicans who want to oppose the president. Isolating them from their business backers.
Yep.
Well, the only thing I'm saying is I don't think there was I don't recall there being a big praise chorus from a chamber spokesperson yesterday.
Well, just remember though that in addition to the actual economic benefits, Havana used to be this awesome place for rich people to go that had sweet hotels, and people in the Chamber of Commerce, they're rich, they want to go to sweet hotels in Havana. So sure. Aside from all of that, there are personal reasons. Why the business community, if you will, is invested in this.
I know this wasn't maybe as respected as its predecessor, but what role do you think the movie Dirty Dancing 2 Havana Nights played in this decision-making process? Do you think Obama felt after the election that he was maybe, let's say, put in a corner and that he said, no one puts me in a corner, and so I'm going to dirty dance a way to restoring diplomatic relations with Cuba?
I think it's more of a Godfather Part 2 kind of thing where, wait until mom dies.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for framing that correctly in pop culture.
All right. We got to go. New topic.
When do we start doing that?
I'm bored.
Okay. So, so the other kind of exciting and literally, I think, zany thing that happened this week was that Sony Pictures Entertainment
– oh, my God.
– canceled the premiere of this Seth Rogen, James Franco movie, The Interview. amid fears that North Korea was coming to get us.
Well, because the movie theater chains said we won't show it because Sony's not supporting it. And then Sony's like, well, we're not going to release this if the movie theaters won't support it.
So this is like the end of like a really kind of weird and winding story. Just to give you background, okay, for anyone who doesn't know it, it's almost impossible to imagine you don't know. The Interview is it's a comedy. Seth Rogen and James Franco, I believe, developed and wrote this comedy. And it is about a sort of like David Frost, a zany sort of David Frost character. Who has this popular interview show, and he's terrible. He's terrible, but because America is garbage, everyone loves this garbage show. And out of nowhere, he apparently gets the request from the North Korean government to come interview their leader, who is now, I can't keep the name straight, Kim Jong-un.
And, who does this kind of thing? Who is infatuated with Dennis Rodman?
Yes,
like flew him in to hang out.
And his father was obsessed with Hollywood. But okay, the CIA asks this stupid interviewer and his producer to assassinate Kim Jong-un while they're interviewing him,
and they successfully do it.
Right. Right. Well, okay, now you just spoiled the movie.
Everybody knows. Spoil the movie. Has the movie ever been more spoiled?
No, that's true. That's true.
It's the ending that is the root of all of this.
So
they blow his head up.
I'll be dead honest. When this movie came out, I was kind of like, wow, they're actually – okay, they're going to make a comedy about – people like murdering a real life human being who we all know.
It's obviously, so gauche.
It's. I was just like, that's kind of.
I thought it was pretty tacky.
It was kind of
funny.
Okay, I didn't think it was tacky, but I definitely thought it was
tacky.
As a comedy go, that's pretty outré. I mean, it's outré.
It's tacky. It's gauche.
You know, the South Park guys kind of did this.
Oh, pop.
But they did it with puppets.
Uh huh.
And so there was like, and they made fun of so many people along the way to murdering. This was Kim Jong-il.
The movie Top Gun, they drop a bomb right in Saddam Hussein's lap.
Yeah.
And it explodes.
He's on a lounge chair by the pool.
That's Hot Shots, dude.
That's not Top Gun.
That was Hot Shots.
That Hot Shots is pretty tight, though.
You knew exactly what I meant. Charlie Sheen, right?
Yeah, wait, okay.
Hot Shots Part 2 is also really tight.
So this movie, it's kind of out there, and I was like actually a little bit surprised that like a studio greenlit this concept.
Even though this is concept, we've done it.
Even though we've done it.
We kill bad guys in movies all the time.
Yep.
And then enter the huge, massive Sony hack that has like for the past month like put everyone in Hollywood on edge because of the you know, all the like kind of secret correspondences that are coming up.
But it's always been suspected to be North Korea
perpetrating. And I believe it's North Korea.
The reports yesterday from where government officials were suggesting.
They confirmed it this week that it was in fact North Korea making these threats.
Right. And so in addition to this like massive hack, and I think people don't understand that even though North Korea is, you know, desperately poor and oppressed nation, they are most of the population doesn't have a connection to the internet, and probably most of the population isn't even aware that there's a thing called the internet. But they are very good at cyber warfare, and they have a division of their military that is dedicated to hacking, and they pull off hacks all the time, mainly in South Korea. I was reading Vox. Max Fisher has a good story about this today. In previous cyber war efforts, North Korea has managed to shut down the South Korean banking system. They've shut down their news agencies. A few years ago, they actually created this sort of like Angry Birds type game. And they got it seeded into the app market in South Korea, and people downloaded this game, and then surprise, it had malware attached to it, and suddenly North Korea had access to thousands and thousands and thousands of South Koreans' telephones. So they have this kind of level of sophistication in terms of cyber warfare that I think a lot of people don't even understand or give them credit for.
Well, it's getting out of hand.
It's seriously getting out of hand. So in addition to the massive Sony hack that took and it's been widely reputed that, like, you know, either the interview was like the precipitating event that offended the North Korean government, or they figured that it gave them enough plausibility to like launch a cyber attack. These hackers have now made threats against movie theaters showing this movie. And like when I – like Sam Biddle pointed out on Twitter yesterday, this – all we're talking about is like an anonymous threat downloaded to like Pastebin. And it's caused the five major movie chains to say, you know what, we want out of the interview business. And so now the movie might not even open, and it's crazy to me.
And people are pissed at the movie business and pissed at Sony, which is not even an American company, which is not sworn to uphold the First Amendment. But this is so contrary to everything we stand for that I see people clamoring for the government to do something.
Which is also crazy. The government is going to, like, we insist this movie open. That's nuts.
No, not to do that, but to defend our culture from cyber attacks, from censor. Are we – is Pyongyang vetting Hollywood movies now?
I mean, it's –
yes.
It's
and,
crazy.
And a studio has canceled another – North Korean films that relate to things in North Korea will not be made now. And that is just out. Outrageous, and something's got
to
give.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that. Like, it got to the point, and again, so zany. It got to the point where I was like, wow, going to see the interview now is like a radical act of patriotism.
Even though
– and an act of, like, pro-free speech. Like, it can unite. It's beyond left and right.
Right. All the filmmakers wanted to do is make a funny movie about killing Kim Jong-un.
It seems more and more hilarious.
I mean, maybe it's good. Some of the Seth Rogen movies are really good. Some of them are just boring and crappy.
But people pointed out
which ones
in the 1930s, Disney made a cartoon that whose only purpose was to make fun of Adolf Hitler. And at the end, you know, a tomato is thrown at his face. It does actually kind of look like his face explodes in the tomato. And that film, which starred Donald Duck, won an award, an Academy Award. So, you know, what the hell?
I mean, but movies about movies that particularly comedies that involve international affairs are often controversial. Like there's a great Ernst Lubitsch movie from the 40s called To Be or Not to Be, which is basically the blueprint for the Quentin Tarantino movie Inglorious Bastards.
Yeah.
But it's one of the best movies ever made. But it's a comedy about like Nazi Germany, and it was just received horribly when it came out. It almost killed Ernst Lubitsch's career, even though he was like one of the most popular directors in Hollywood. His people were just like, this is you know, World War II is no laughing matter. You can't go around telling jokes about Hitler. And the movie holds up incredibly well. It's a fantastic movie, but people did get fussy over it. I don't think that's what I mean. When we talk about this comedy being gauche or tacky for blowing up someone's head, I do think I may be jumping the gun a little bit there, because with comedy, so much is dependent on context. Maybe it's really funny. It just looks like we're never going
to
know.
I didn't call it gauche to mean that it's not funny.
I agree.
It's risqué. It's outré.
This, I mean,
it may be,
all
it
kinds
may be
of
really
French
funny.
Words.
I don't know.
What do you mean we're never going to know?
I think it looks really funny.
The movie's freaking canceled,
taste.
Man. They're not going to show the movie.
They're certainly going to distribute the movie.
So here's something the government
form.
Could do.
All they have to do is another anonymous threat that, like, Netflix will explode
really,
in a tower
this
of flame.
This cannot be the new status quo. The government could step in and tell these movie theaters, hey, if there's a terrorist attack, we'll guarantee your losses. We'll help you with the liability. There's things.
Don't we have to pass TRIA to do that?
There actually is, yeah, an insurance program that does that.
I mean, there are policies addressing this, but these companies shouldn't cancel movies. This can't be what happens. It's un-American.
Yeah, do you really think that this becomes like the day the clown cried and we never see this movie?
No way. We are all going to see this movie.
Like, it's got to get out in some way.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind.
When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to monday.com.
If anything, it will be more widely seen and more popular and better known because of this. And that will be hilarious, but we need to get there.
And that
also,
raises,
people don't go to theaters is another thing.
Theaters are horrible.
Much smaller part of the movie business than it used to be.
Can I ask one question? Do you think even there's a remote chance that all of this mishigas is like simply the most complicated and ridiculous viral marketing campaign for a movie ever?
That would be great.
It would be great. James Franco and Seth Rogen would go to jail.
They've been canceling interviews and stuff, but they had been in the midst of their promo tour. They were on Saturday Night Live.
Yes.
So I find that very unlikely. However wonderful it would be. Remember when Joaquin Phoenix was acting all weird, and that did turn out to be a promotional hoax.
He was
there's precedent for that, but no, this is
ironic about this is that, you know, if North Korea did want people to see this movie, they went about it all the wrong way. They invoked what people called the Streisand effect.
Absolutely.
In fact,
I have seen the scene where they blow up Kim Jong-un on the internet.
This is exactly what Dan Snyder did with that Dave McKenna piece that ran in the Washington City paper, that A to Z guide to how awful Dan Snyder is. Like, people in Washington read it because it was in their daily newspaper, and then it passed from people's memory and consciousness until Snyder came and like sued the city paper, and suddenly everyone across the country was reading this story that Dave McKenna wrote. And it just goes to show, man, these tiny ass dictators. They're at the low point of the dictator curve.
And that was, you know, Dan Snyder filed that lawsuit before he had hired Lanny Davis. And I think it's clear what's going to happen here.
Right.
I think you know where Lanny Davis will be headed.
Lanny Davis will definitely support the North Korean government in this. There's no doubt. There's no doubt. Like, I'm sure they've already called him. I'm sure he's already called them. Do you need some help?
Manny
and I are very close. We're good friends.
Speaking of Outre and Gauche, that's what this was. The point is, very bad PR by North Korea. Gonna backfire.
Yeah. But
unless this is the new normal and everyone's scared to make movies because of threats.
Potentially
a
business opportunity for Lenny Davis, though.
I just want to say, Seth Rogen and James Franco, if you're listening, and let's face it, they're not. They're not. But if they're
probably
listening,
are.
Yes, they are.
If you're listening, come to our studio do a table read of the interview with us. We are brave enough to broadcast the interview as a radio show in its entirety. You are welcome to our studio. You are welcome to our help. Let's get this movie out there somehow.
Yeah. This year has been awful. It is the worst year since 2008.
A dumpster fire.
It is maybe the worst year since 2001. It just has 2014 has been fucking terrible, and there have been almost no, at least in the world of public affairs, there have been almost no redeeming aspects to this terrible year.
Yeah. Let's go over some of the worst things about 2014.
Right. And now the worst things about 2014.
I see at the top of this list, ISIS.
ISIS. Ugh. Terrible.
Awful.
Yeah. You know what else is terrible?
We're down on ISIS.
ISIS.
Thumbs down, ISIS.
ISIS is out.
You know what
hey,
else sucks?
ISIS, you're out of line.
Yeah. Who's hot and who's not? ISIS is definitely not.
Yeah. They're like cartoonishly awful people and
They can't even draw a circle on their flag. It looks like crap.
Yeah, their flag, ISIS's flag looks like crap. They're crappy people. They behead journalists.
They
oppress.
Suck.
People.
Even for a terrorist death cult, they suck.
Right? I mean, even Al-Qaeda was like, fuck these guys.
Also sucks. Ebola.
Oh, the worst.
Yeah. Huge Ebola outbreak in Africa. Like, thousands of people died. That disease causes you to shit and vomit to death. It is terrible.
Yeah.
As terrible plagues go, Ebola is a terrible plague.
And America really popped its garters when we got one dude with Ebola. Like, it was like a collective freak out. Like, everyone got the fucking vapors.
It was embarrassing.
It was a super, really seriously embarrassing moment for America, especially the American media.
Bobby Jindal, no one, it didn't even come near his state. And he's like, everyone stay away! Embarrassing.
Embarrassing.
Awful. Yeah. Ebola was awful.
Thumbs down, Ebola.
Thumbs down. Next.
Police continued killing people impunity.
So police for many years have killed Americans literally every day to the tune of more than 400 people per year, at least. This was going on, but you know what? We became newly aware of it, and it's big thumbs down.
Yeah,
thumbs down, cops. No, it's like this is the year that cops like attempted to literally make killing Black Americans like their lifestyle choice. It was like, hey, this is just what we're into, man. We just like roll up on a little kid and shoot him.
It did turn out that police were surprisingly aggressive in defending this practice. You can go down, look at disparate news stories, and all across the country every week, he was reaching for his waistband.
Yep. Yep.
Darren Wilson pulled out the waistband, almost perfunctory. He'd already been punched. The kid had already reached for his gun. The kid was charging at him like a quote-unquote demon. Also, he had his hand on his waistband. Here's the waistband defense.
Here's the thing. If there was
That's
like
where hands are.
It's just where your hands are, man.
If like there was a if there was a Black dude who actually had no pants on who got shot by cops, cops would be like, he was reaching for his waistband.
No, there is a case where a dude was shot by cops and he was only wearing underwear.
You're kidding me.
Yeah.
You're fucking kidding me. Like, that was just my attempt at a terrible joke to make us feel better, and that actually did happen.
Reality was ahead of you.
All right, well, thumbs down, cops.
Thumbs down.
Also, civil asset forfeiture reform is necessary, too.
Well, on the thumbs up side, I think the reason this is getting attention is that there is renewed support for criminal justice reform.
Yep.
And maybe actually that's why the only reason this has come to light in a bad way, and also because crime is down.
Good articles being written about it, and on both sides of the political spectrum, you have support for reforming the criminal justice system.
All right, so that's a thumbs up.
But while we're on the subject of the state killing people, remember this year we saw a host of botched executions.
Oh, terrible.
In Oklahoma and other places.
I didn't even think about that. Like, we're so bloodthirsty and we seemingly are getting worse at it.
Yes. It's not just that we kill people, but we can't even kill them right.
Right.
And we torture them to death with weird secret drugs.
And that is new because the medical professionals have been withholding the death serum. And so these municipalities are just like, well,
we'll make up our own shit.
They're just mixing stuff together like little kids with a
arsenic and concrete.
Yeah, it's a joke.
I just grabbed all this stuff out from under my sink and mixed it together, and now you're dead.
It's essentially you're dying painfully.
Well, I mean, and you can understand why the medical profession doesn't want to be involved in killing people, because what a doctor does is not kill people. That is your job, to keep people from dying.
I think there's an oath of some type that they swear to.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep. First do no harm. Anyway, thumbs down. Botched executions. Let's go on.
What else we got?
The NFL. Horrible.
Oh, God. Oh. Terrible.
NFL is horrible. Ray Rice, what the fuck?
Yeah, but the fish rots from the head. And, like, I think that, they nearly made Roger Goodell, like, man of the year time. And it had to have been, like, one of those ironic man of the years because, like.
Like making Hitler man of the year.
He's super corrupt.
Oh.
They actually did that, though.
I mean, that wasn't just a Hitler joke.
I think not only is Roger Goodell super corrupt, but he's also really stupid.
I would limit my criticism to the NFL ownership, which Roger Goodell is their figurehead. I still enjoy watching the football sport.
Yeah, Roger Goodell is just a terrible.
My favorite team has had an awful, awful, awful year, though the worst of my life.
It's not going to get better.
And
either.
run by an awful, awful owner named Dan Snyder.
We've already been over that. Next,
to NFL.
Thumbs
great.
Down, NFL. Okay, what's next?
In Ukraine, they shot down an airplane for no reason.
Awful.
Putin. Everything having to do with Putin.
He's terrible.
Yeah, increasingly isolated, both maybe not inside his country, although a little bit, but increasingly isolated on the international stage. He came out of his hosting his bonkers Olympics with a return to just like zany fucking madman
and now we are having we are on the verge of a total economic crisis in Russia, and economic instability
But this are as a result of our sanctions against him.
Somewhat. Also as a result, which
sort
are the result
necessary.
Of his,
it's also this, he's just got a cracker's ass economy.
Well, I mean, it's you know the curse of the oil state is definitely
clear.
Now we went into those sanctions hoping that this would happen and not expecting the blowback to harm the U.S. economy. And that's what people still believe will be the case.
I think that's true. I think that's true. I mean, the U.S. economy is not very deeply connected to the Russian economy, but eras of severe economic instability tend to breed hardline conservative governments doing terrible things. We've seen that.
We're all concerned about Russia right now.
Yeah,
my concern is that you don't know what a cornered animal would do, and like I think that we've reached the stage where Putin is now sort of a cornered animal. So
though we have surpassed the stage where he looked like some kind of brilliant genius who humiliated Barack Obama. Yeah, we're done with that.
That was a stupid stage because sort of effortlessly went into motion and like, first of all, you know, hit him where it hurts, which is all of his kleptocratic friends. And now we've put him to the brink of this now. But the question is now, like, does he become more dangerous?
What is the next phase?
Right. Is he going to like come humbly and apologize for all his shit? Probably not. So there's probably a next stage, and the next stage is probably very ugly too.
Shooting down that plan was extremely horrible and Bush-y.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It served no military. It was just insane.
It was an I'm sure really it was an accident because the people
an accident.
The people who are the blunt edge of Putin's military renaissance are dipshits and a gang that can't shoot straight. Really, just a gang of thugs.
All right, we have a lot of terrible things
to
cover
here. So thumbs down, Putin.
Gamergate.
Oh, wow.
Gamergate is terrible.
With a passing familiarity of it, is so breathtakingly awful.
Yeah, it really is.
Video game nuts harassing women.
For no reason.
And journalists.
Claiming it's about journalistic ethics. It's hard even to wrap your head around it if you're not like intimately familiar with what's going on. I've read articles about it, and I cannot make head nor tail of why these losers
do
this.
Imagine like the Ebola virus like grew hands and was able to manipulate a computer, keyboard, and mouse. That's what Ebola would do with its time.
Gamergate.
Yeah. So I mean, you're talking about like just sort of like an anthropomorphic disease spreading itself.
But to be clear, it's online harassment. It's also like death and rape threats. So it really sucks.
It's really bad. These people are
thumbs down. Next.
Robin Williams killed himself.
That was a drag.
Nobody
needed that.
Fucking terrible.
Yeah. Well, you know, Chris Rock in that interview said lots of comedians kill themselves because, you know, there's a fundamental sadness at the root of people who do comedy. You know, all the stuff they have to witness and deal. And Robin Williams is a super troubled guy who, like, had always, you know.
But nobody knew that. People did not think of him that way.
I'm not sure that's true. I think that
most people.
Yeah, most people. Like, I thought there was like a fundamental worrisome sadness at the core of Robin Williams, everything he did. And I was not actually shocked that his life ended this way, but I was deeply saddened by it because he was a cool guy.
Next. He was great.
Yeah. Thumbs down.
School shootings.
They keep happening.
UC Santa Barbara, they're happening all over the place. It's like,
the only thing that stops them is when school's out for the summer.
It's really true. Well, you know, what could stop them would be sane gun laws, but instead we chose not to do that as a country. So,
and Bloomberg's gun group put out a thing just listing the number of school shootings that had occurred from a point. And people said, well, those aren't all school shootings because gun nuts will discount a shooting at a school if it was not the precise type in which a nutcase is just randomly mowing down people.
So if someone has a gun and shoots somebody at a school, that does not count as a school shooting.
No, that people are like, well, listen, some of those were like gang related. Some of them were accidents. Well, did a gun go off? Yeah. Did a bullet strike a person? I think it counts as a school shooting. Next.
Thumbs down. People dying at school.
Okay. JP Morgan Chase.
Still a bank.
Still a bank. Still settling over various infractions. I believe the latest one after, you know, you could be forgiven for thinking that JP Morgan Chase was just this thing that's designed to settle with the federal government that happens to have a bank attached to it. But the latest one is over rigging foreign exchange markets. Why? I don't know.
Wasn't there also one very recently over the mortgage practices again?
Yes, they've settled over mortgages like six times.
But aren't these settlements also a drag? Aren't they essentially treated like dandruff on J.P. Morgan Chase's shoulder?
Yes, because J.P. Morgan Chase has made over $4 billion, I believe, all but one quarter since the financial crisis.
I'll be honest with you. Between banks and like black people being killed by cops, it is like Satan turned to Tom Wolfe and said, "I'll see your bonfire of the vanities," and reached you a dumpster fire of bullshit.
That's pretty much it. Yeah.
Next.
Moving on from that, this is kind of one of the lower terriblenesses, but I think this underscores just how bad the year has been. This is not the worst thing that happened all year, but it was just the kind of year where this kind of shit was going to happen. It was disclosed that Chelsea Clinton received $600,000 to basically do terrible crap for NBC.
Oh, this is annoying.
Yeah.
$600,000.
Yeah. To be clear, to be an on-air journalist, and she did like only a few stories.
That sucked.
That were just like,
I don't even remember.
They were heartwarming.
Garbage stories.
I don't even remember the story she did. Like, I thought that like the whole, we hired.
It was like, kids can try and believe in themselves. They'll do anything.
Wait, yay. Was that like literally a story?
Yeah. Was that just fucking bullshit? It's fake journalism. There should be – if you do those kinds of stories, if there were such a thing as a journalism charter, you would have your charter revoked.
Yeah.
All the money went to the Clinton Foundation, Zach, you monster.
Yeah, right. Well
– next.
Thumbs down how bad nepotism is and the fungibility of money.
Okay. There was a war in Israel.
I like how we put Chelsea Clinton getting 600 grand to do bad journalism was higher on your list than the Israel-Palestine.
Well, it's in no particular order.
Are things getting worse or better? You can never tell.
It was a war in Israel. They shelled schools and hospitals. A lot of kids
and precipitated by a kidnapping that was outrageous.
Yep.
And it was amazing how this one thing turned into a massive conflagration. It seems like an intractable mess. However, it also seems like a lot of schools and hospitals were needlessly shelled. I don't know.
The peace process appears completely dead. I mean, Israel's is having a the Likud party is having new sets of elections. The settlements are going on unabated.
I feel like the main goal of any human life is to try to learn to live with other people. And like it's just,
oh, interesting.
You have a situation where like you have people who just like, you know, resolutely do not want to live together.
I thought it was to have an estate and tell people to get the fuck off your property.
Oh yeah, there's that too. That's
essentially
also,
you're saying these two teams just don't like each other.
Actually, you know what? Eventually you have to say that, like, we're going into a presidential election, and I'm sure someone's going to say in a debate, it was like, oh, so what is your vision for the Israel-Palestine peace process? Go. And, like, I'm going to look for a presidential candidate to say, you know what? We've been trying this for, like, 40 years, and we've been telling our kids that we're going to fix this problem, and, like, multiple groups of adults have tried from America to make this happen. No more. We can't promise it. You know, we're tired of being the crutch on which a bad faith brokerage consistently happens. So I'm out.
Also, Bitcoin. Bitcoin's still a thing. Bitcoin is stupid.
Is this
a waste
like
of time?
Is this Gamergate again?
No, Bitcoin is different from Gamergate.
Bitcoin pretends
explain
to be a currency,
how.
But it is not a currency. It is just a fake commodity.
Right.
That is so dumb.
It's the Gamergate of currency.
So we really don't
it's
have
not
much.
Really sexist. It's just stupid.
It's the CrossFit of currency.
It's like if you looked at all the economic problems in the world and you decided to try and solve them, these people did this and they said, okay, well, we will solve the problem of inflation. That's the one you solve. Not poverty, not inequality. I'm worried about inflation, which currently is not a problem right now in the United States where this currency was developed.
Mild inflation benefits the masses.
It's usually
we could
fine.
Actually use a tiny bit of inflation, but like
too much debt.
Inflation hawks are like coprophiles. It's just like they feed on shit and like it sustains them and they never go away no matter what force of logic you throw at them. It's like, oh, I can't listen to your excellent points. I'm too busy gorging myself on shit and growing stronger.
So. Oh, there's got to be something worse than Bitcoin on here.
The Torch Report, in a sense.
You're really wildly veering from like mild garbage to like dark satanic mills.
So in a sense, though, it's good that the Torch Report came out, right? Because it means that we are making progress. It means that there is at least some attempt to come to terms with the horrible things that
are
were
we
done in our name.
60% of Americans support torture? a week after the Torture Report is released.
Yeah, it's too bad. Torture's not good.
That's terrible.
Yeah, we're garbage monsters. Okay, thumbs down Torture. What's next?
That's what I got. That's
really?
My list. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Do you have more?
Yeah, so that's it? That's
a lot of bad shit for
yeah,
one
you're
year.
Right. No, it's kind of, you
we
know.
Probably left off something really
oh,
bad.
Yeah. How about this? If you're a Democrat, you had to deal with the midterms, and those were painful for you.
Eh.
And think about this. Depressing fact from midterm elections.
But if you're a Republican, those were great.
But yeah. but here's the thing. Here's a nonpartisan point. The most important issue on voters' minds by far, as with every election since 2008, was the economy.
Which and, improved.
Yeah, but over 60% of voters who overwhelmingly voted in Republicans all over the country said that they did not think the Republicans had a plan for how to improve the economy. So there is just pure despair and nihilism in the hearts of American voters.
I think someone – I can't remember who put it this way, but someone – I was listening to somebody who talked about how like what's happened to the Democratic Party is that like they've become decoupled from their popular policies.
Yeah.
Like no one identifies them as the party that like is for the minimum wage. And like I don't know, it's I think it's because like for the past couple of election cycles, Democrats have run on a platform of that Republican over there is nuts, and like I mean it worked
sometimes,
for a while.
Sometimes it's true.
It worked for a while. Time ran out on that strategy, and they didn't have anything to show for it, and they actually ran away from their accomplishments. I'm kind of agnostic and like talking about like an election result is like bad year, good year, you know, because
yeah,
like,
it's
a moment in time and you don't know what these people who've been sent to Washington will do. And and there's still a lot of,
I don't know if you're a Democratic operative, if you're a Democratic
yeah,
Party
you're a
operative,
Democratic
you had a bad year.
You're sad.
Yeah. Unless you got paid, which is what operatives exist for, getting paid.
Yeah,
just to
but,
get paid.
But you know, they've been, I think they've been, I think if your average Democratic operative has been like living on borrowed time and it's time to like figure out something new, you know, and that's, so this election result could be the smack across the face you needed.
All right, we also subsidized Wall Street just for no reason at the end of the
right.
year.
Oh,
that happened too.
Season's greetings.
Arsenal lost to Manchester United. That was disappointing.
Me personally,
Tim Howard had a great game and still lost in the World Cup.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah, that was like we celebrated losing that.
My cat died. Like, that was terrible.
I'm sorry,
that
Jason.
Was really bad.
While I was on vacation. Yeah, give me some more pity. More pity for me.
Sorry,
right,
man.
Just kidding. No, don't. It's all right.
All right, everybody.
But you know what? I think like okay, 2015. Like everybody, let's try to get a grip on this.
We will revisit this theme.
Let's try to be better on the internet. Let's try to be better internet people. Let's try not to like maybe wash the garbage around that extra cycle.
Are you telling me to shut down my Twitter account?
Everyone should,
it's garbage.
Everyone should delete their Twitter, but we know that's not going to happen.
Stop eating garbage and stop eating shit.
Yep.
Season's greetings.
Merry Christmas.
And see you guys later.
So that's what happened this week. This podcast was produced and edited by Ibrahim Balki, with technical direction from Brad Shannon and assistance from Christine Canetta, Chris Gentilviso, and Adriana Ucero. I'm Jason Linkins, and this week we had our usual people, Huffington Post senior politics reporters Zach Carter and Arthur Delaney. So That Happened is now available on iTunes. Please check us out in the iTunes store for the Huffington Post whole family of podcasts. Subscribe to the ones you want, and please tell your friends. If there's something you'd like to hear us talk about, send an email to sothathappened@huffingtonpost.com. As always, thanks for listening. We miss you already.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.